Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Scorker Talker Women's Football Podcast. Now, as we did last week, we're again going to be looking at the Women's Super League, domestic games as well as the Champions League, which is now into the semi-final stage. Now, I'm only one of your hosts, Mariam Naz. You might have seen me not just in Scorker, but also I do work for Total Sport and the Frank Kirby Fight Club. And as mentioned, I'm not alone. I'm joined as always by Harry Edwards. Harry, how are you this week?
I'm very good. I'm looking forward to what's been, you know, another football-packed week to preview and review.
Yeah, it has been quite a lot of drama and a lot of action, and we can start right at the top with Chelsea. Now, Chelsea had a lot of pressure on them because Man City has played before them. You know, that pushed them back into second position. They definitely had to win that game against Aston Villa, but I guess we both kind of thought that that was a bit of a winnable game given Aston Villa's current position in the league, and it was a double from Sam Kerr that got them through to the 3 points and back on top of the table.
Yeah, I think it was only in January that they played their first game, and it was, unless my memory's deceiving me, it was 4-0 Chelsea, easy win. So I think people were expecting more of the same, especially how Aston Villa have fared in recent games against the big teams. But it wasn't, I don't think it was as good a win as everyone was expecting.
Yeah, I think it was, there was definitely a reshuffling of the line, probably because Emma Hayes has one eye on the second leg against Wolfsburg, which will be on Wednesday. So it was a bit of a difficult performance, but again, it was always nice to see that link up between Sam Kerr and Frank Kirby, which, according to Opta, well, at least for as we discussed, it's like error in their part. It does still make them the most dangerous attacking duo in the league, and that's because their goal involvements are so strong. It's not simply that there's one player scoring and one assisting. They're both doing both of those things for each other.
Yeah, Emma Hayes said after the game, it's almost telepathic between them, and you can see that. You know, Sam Kerr and Frank Kirby, they don't really need to look up to know where the other one is. I know there are times where it hasn't happened, where the run hasn't come, but more often than not, you know, you just see them making that link up play, the runs. There was it didn't result in a goal, but there was a build up against Aston Villa where Sam Kerr just flicked the ball round the corner without looking, and there was Frank Kirby ready to run. Like you said, they are getting the goals both together and setting each other up. But I think their overall partnership helps Chelsea throughout the game.
Yeah, and it's always good to have that element where you can know, you know, you're just going to score goals. You're going to have a part of your attack that's always going to pull through it because it's just so multi-dimensional. And it was needed because that was a game that Chelsea needed to win. And only because Man City, who very, very narrowly got through their game against Reading, or they won, so that put them up ahead on the top of the league. It's almost like we have to expect both these teams are going to win all their games, and that sets us up for that big game in April when the two meet.
Yeah, like you said, we are all now focused fully on that game. We do, I think, expect the teams to win the remaining games. I know Chelsea do have, I believe, Everton at some point in that run, but These two teams in the league, at least, they both, you know, they know how to win. They know how to, especially this weekend, get the results when they aren't playing well. Because Man City, Reading made it tough for them once again. They took points off them earlier in the season, and I don't know. It's just obviously both the teams this weekend are coming off of Champions League performances, which we can go into later. But it's a really exciting title race, and these games against the teams not in the battle, you need the moments when you're not playing well, and it was Lauren Hemp this weekend with, you know, she had been quiet for most of the game, and then there was that moment of magic to set up Chloe Kelly for the winner right at the end.
Yeah, and I guess it must be almost awful for the teams that are on the other end of that, but it says a little bit more, like you mentioned, about the likes of Chelsea and Man City. In order to kind of win the league, you've got to have performances like this. And Man City have now had a few games where they scraped by. I mean, this week it was Reading, last week it was a different team. What do you think that says a bit more about Gareth Taylor and his setup? Do you think it's just because they've got one eye on the Champions League? You know, they're facing Barcelona, which is a whole thing in itself. We'll discuss a little bit more about that later. But how do you kind of rate almost his managing the season, given that he's come straight from the academy setup into the team with very little experience?
Yeah, I know we've spoken about it before. He had a lot of criticism for his start to Man City, but in recent weeks he had that run. I think it's a tough one. It's a strange one to call because, you know, you can say, like, he is still learning about his team. I think, again, for Man City at the moment, their squad doesn't seem as strong, maybe, like, depth-wise as Chelsea, just to compare the two Champions League teams. And I think, again, like you said, because they are still trying to fight for the Champions League, and then after the international break, we've got the FA Cup coming back in. And these are going to be the real tests for their mentality. And I think there's just something missing for Man City. They've not, you know, Ellen White's brilliant, but I don't think they've got that real goal scoring threat pulling them through these games at this specific time. You know, they've got the goals in the squad, but it's just at this moment. Maybe teams are working out how to frustrate them. You know, they still are finding a way through, but they're easier to stop, in a sense.
Yeah, and I think it's a very important point you mentioned, though, because it's something that we've seen. Even Chelsea, the teams that Chelsea have played and other big teams, Man City don't have a great midfield press, and that absence of Kira Walsh and then adding in players like Rose Lavelle, who are sort of Aaron Cuthbert, like to push forward, that lack of press is what allows teams to play through you, and it's a very key component if you're a counter-attacking team like Chelsea, or in this case like Barcelona. And I think that's one way that they need to think of bolstering that side. Now, they've made obviously quite a lot of financial decisions in bringing in players like Roosevelt, Sam Mewis. Those are the players that kind of need to fill those positions. So maybe it's the fact that Gareth Taylor needs to tweak his squad and think about the kind of formation he's using, and that will help build that strength. Pressing, or becoming a pressing team, though, isn't something that happens overnight. It's something that Chelsea have worked for a few seasons now. So, like you mentioned, I know he's quite early in his tenure here, so I just wonder whether it's going to take some time to reach that level of sort of perfection almost in the squad that he's looking for.
Yeah, and it would help if he started playing Rose Lavelle in her strongest position. You know, I know that a lot of people aren't happy with his use of her, both fans watching the WSL from America and Man City fans who from watching the United States national team, know how good she is. When played in the right position, and I don't think you can use how she's playing right now as a stick to beat her with, you know, to say, oh, maybe she's not that good as, you know, some rival fans have. It is just like we've said, all about how, you know, Taylor learns to work with his team. And, you know, again, we keep going back to Chelsea, but that's just because they're a good example. You look at Emma Hayes, she's had so many years, like you said, building this team and building the squad around how she wants them to play and picking the right players in. And then you have, like, even the younger players in the Chelsea squad who are stars who have been stars elsewhere, and, you know, they're taking their time to get into the team. That's because, like, again, like you've said, this doesn't happen overnight. And I think, not that we can't judge Taylor right now, but I think we've got to give him the benefit of the doubt at the moment. You know, give him maybe another season or two and see who Man City bring in for him to then truly, you know, make a judgment on his managerial credentials at this level.
You mentioned benefit of the doubt there. Another manager who we've had to give the benefit of the doubt is Joe Montemurro, and his team faced Tottenham at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So, you know, North London derby, pretty big game, but it was a pretty big scoreline, and it wasn't for Tottenham, it was for Arsenal. It was an emphatic 3-0 victory, and that involved an absolutely insane volley from Vivian Medema. Another disappointing result for Tottenham, but playing against a side like Arsenal, who now have got back-to-back wins, and you can see that Montemurro is finally pulling the strings and getting a formation that brings the best out of his attack, it was kind of expected, no?
Yeah, this is a fixture that Arsenal have dominated in the short history of it in the WSL. I think, especially in these past few weeks, we've been able to see now Jordan Knobbs back at her best in the midfield role. I think everybody who has watched Knobbs play for Arsenal and England in the past knows how good she is. But I don't think Montemurro had been getting the best out of her for various reasons. And again, you've got at the back, you've got Katie McCabe playing excellently again. And you mentioned Miedema's goal. it was McCabe's brilliant cross from the corner to set her up, and it was McCabe again who set up Wilbur Moy last weekend against Manchester United. The momentum's really on their side for the Champions League spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's nice to always see them come back into a form. I think they struggled for a long while to get the most out of their attacking options. And as you mentioned, it was because of that injury to Jordan Knobbs. She was out for a while. You know, they fell out of the Conte Cup because they had that game against Chelsea, and that was when she was not present. And from there on, things became a bit difficult to unlock that passage through to Van der Donk and Medema. But it seems like her sort of introduction to that, and also Montemurro tweaking things to allow those flank areas to open, as you mentioned, to allow passes from McCabe through to Medema, that's really enhanced the attacking options.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird because Medema seems to get a lot of stick for when she's when she goes on some scoring droughts, even though she is still the top scorer this season. But where Knobbs was missing, like you said, and she wasn't able to get the link up with the attack, it just meant that Medema was having to come backwards. You know, yes, she's good there as well, but that's not where you want someone like Medema on the ball. Or if you do, you know, you do need Knobbs to push forward to join in that attack. And I think you have to look at Tottenham for a second as well, just because during the game on Twitter, their former co-manager Juan Carlos Amoros, who managed them with Karen Hill at the start of the season, was a bit scathing of the team. He wrote, "Wow, sometimes when you take the heart away from somewhere, it shows and it hurts." And you know, he's not wrong. This, you know, Tottenham changed their manager or managers to, you know, to try and improve, but we've just not really seen that at the moment.
I think they did notify that there was clearly an element of attack that they needed to fill out on in terms of an out-and-out striker, and having Alex Morgan in was meant to fill that hole. But, you know, there were so many injuries, and she'd just come back from giving birth to her baby Charlie, and that meant that players like Ayan and Neville were forced to come into the game a little bit more. And it did really put a lot of pressure on their attack, and I think that's something they struggle with a lot in terms of scoring goals. And now, as you mentioned, Morgan leaving and the new manager coming in, like having Rahane Skinner there, it doesn't seem like things have improved. It seems like there was a period where things were stable, I think that's probably a better term, more stable, but then it's just gone back to the previous form.
Yeah, like it's definitely more stable in Skinner's first few games. I think we can criticise Tottenham, but I think it probably give Skinner like Taylor the benefit of the doubt, and maybe wait to see if she's backed. So I think in the women's game, it's easy, or some people, which I know I can be guilty of as well, you link the name in the women's game to the name in the men's game. So you might think, or some people might see Tottenham all, they should be doing better than they are. But a reminder that this is only their second season in top flight, so they're not, you know, you don't expect them to be up there and challenging. You just want, like you said, some stability. And, you know, I think they're safe this season. It's now for them maybe all about setting the foundations for next season and the future.
Yep, absolutely. And you hope, like you mentioned, they're safe this season, and you hope to do well on that basis. But you can't say the same for Bristol and Birmingham. And they faced off each other at the bottom of the table, and it ended in a 1-1 draw. And to be completely honest, both teams could have done with a win to push them up the table, and instead they share the points. And it's a bit concerning because Birmingham only picked up 2 out of a possible 15 points in the last 5 games, and that kind of run always spells trouble.
Yeah, there was a point in the season where I think we all, or most people might have said, looking at the table, you know, I think Birmingham are safe, given the situation that the teams below them were in. But like you said, if we look at those past 5 games, you know, they've had 2 points. Bristol City below them have won 5 points. Aston Villa, 3 points. West Ham, like them, 2 points. But Villa and West Ham have a game in hand on Birmingham. Although I know Villa and West Ham still have to play each other twice, and Aston Villa have to play Birmingham. It's, you know, like you said, this was a game, Birmingham against Bristol City, that I think both of them needed to win, and the draw does neither of them any good.
That's a concerning thing, I guess, because goals have clearly been lacking. And when the goals are lacking, that shows in the results and performances. And both teams are struggling with four goal difference results as well, so that kind of puts even more pressure going into the business end of the season as to which of these teams can score enough to at least have that, you know, have that benefit of the goal difference perhaps pushing them up the table.
Yeah, Bristol City really don't have goal difference on their side. You know, they've scored two more than Birmingham, but they've conceded 28 more. You know, I think Birmingham have really benefited, not sure, I'd say they've benefited from having someone like Hannah Hampton in goal. Sophie Bagley is a good goalkeeper for Bristol City, but Hannah Hampton has saved their skin so many times. Even in the defeats, you know, keeping the score down. And it's quite an interesting piece in The Athletic the other day that Hannah Hampton doesn't have any depth perception. So for her to be as good as she is, given the fact that she, you know, she cannot, she's disadvantaged compared to the other goalkeepers, I think it just speaks how good she is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do hope that, you know, given her form and the way that those teams are going, you know, obviously one of them are probably going to be in the relegation hunt in the end of the season. But in a general way, the way that the league is panning, it's exciting. There's a lot of things going on at the top of the table. It's definitely a two-horse race between Man City and Chelsea. But then there's also the idea of the Champions League spots. Are Arsenal going to make that? Who will avoid relegation? There's a lot going on. There's definitely a lot more going on in the Champions League. And we had the semi-finals this week, or at least the first legs of the semi-final, and Chelsea were facing Wolfsburg. Now, it was taking place at a neutral venue in Budapest, but it would have been Chelsea's home fixture. So if they were playing at the King's Meadow, it's now in Budapest. And it was a bit of a shock for Chelsea because Wolfsburg came out really quick out of the blocks and they had so many chances because they were playing such intense possessive football centrally in a way that Chelsea's double pivot was struggling with.
Yeah, I think we spoke before the game in last week's episode about the midfield battle. And, you know, Wolfsburg won the midfield battle. Ingrid Engen, especially, she completely shut out the Chelsea midfield, which, one, enabled Wolfsburg to get through Chelsea, but also stopped Chelsea from playing out from defence to get the ball to the attack. So, you know, whenever Berger played it short to her centre-backs or the full-backs, you ended up just seeing Millie Bryant kicking the ball long to try and, you know, because the Wolfsburg pressure was just too much. And then it just ended up getting recycled and Wolfsburg were back on the attack. I think Wolfsburg did that brilliantly. They were just missing that killer touch in front of goal.
Yeah, they were. And I think I read someone, I don't know the exact results, and it's probably something we'll tag once the pod is live, but they had like an XG of over 3 and Chelsea were like 0.5 or 6. And I think that tells you exactly how many chances they were having. But they just like you say, they somehow just weren't scoring. And to be fair, Berger did some fantastic work to keep them at bay as well. But then came the goals, and it was a bit of a switch-up. It was almost like, right, we're clearly struggling to play through them. They're clearly not that element. The team adapted very quickly and decided to play over the top of their defence. And that's how that first goal came through Fran Kirby and into Sam Kerr. It was just a beautiful pass.
Yeah, I think Emma Hayes used the half-time really well to drill into her team. What was going wrong? You know, you'd hope that managers use that 10-15 minutes well to make changes, but it's not often that you see teams come out looking completely changed. And it was in the space of 15-20 minutes in the second half that Chelsea really took control. They scored with the two big chances that they had, and I think people watching knew it was coming because that's Chelsea. You know, again, in these games, they can, you know, soak up the pressure, but they will take their chances as well. And it really, I wouldn't say it shocked Wolfsburg, but it showed them, you know, that they do need to be more clinical, especially through making the most of. Because I thought Jonna Andersson and Magda Eriksson looked very shaky in the first leg. Was something that Wolfsburg targeted on their right, Chelsea's left. But it was just the lack of a presence in the middle.
Yeah, and it definitely did hurt them because not only did we have that goal from Sam Kerr in the 55th minute, as you mentioned, it was followed up by Penel Harden 66. So there was a real blitz. I mean, we've seen that from Chelsea across the season. They have this period of 5 to 10 minutes where they're like, okay, we're going to level up. We're going to go into fifth gear. And they blitz out 2 or 3 goals or they just kill the game. I think we saw that today, how they adapted. But unfortunately, that wasn't the end of the game. There was another goal, and that came from Wolfsburg only about 4 minutes later from a penalty call.
Yeah, penalties in the Champions League this season, what's new? I think Chelsea are getting a bit too comfortable in conceding them. It was a moment of really sloppy defending that allowed it. On Harder's goal, Chelsea capitalised on what you'd say some poor defending from Wolfsburg, but Emma Hayes would have been really annoyed at them allowing giving Wolfsburg a chance to get straight back. And we know what Berger's done in the Champions League from penalties this season, but Janssen just gave her no chance. And I'm pretty sure after the game Hayes said, Wolfsburg might actually be in control of the tie now because of that away goal, even though it wasn't, like you said, at King's Meadow.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock, I think, and you do hope that decisions like that don't cost Chelsea the game, because so far going through the tournament they've been doing really well, and they've had a few decisions go against them, one of which actually happened in that Wolfsburg game, and it was a bit of, I think, what we can call awful refereeing, because the way that she was giving out cards was a bit sort of not consistent, because there was that challenge from Pop on Berger, absolutely clattered her. She wasn't carded for that, but Neema Charles was carded for a really clean tackle. Like, if you watch the replay, she goes straight through and she gets every bit of the ball, but she was given a yellow card for that, and that means that she's going to miss second leg. And now Chelsea are without their first choice fullback, and now also without their backup fullback, who was not playing in a preferred position, but probably one of Chelsea's best players. What are they going to do now?
Yeah, like you said, sometimes you might see a yellow card given for a good tackle that also takes a player, but this was all ball, and it was it was bad enough that it was a free kick, but for her to get a yellow card, and looking at the replays, there was no signs of dissent or anything. It must have been for the foul. I think we can go back to the Aston Villa game at the weekend for Chelsea to see, what they're doing or what they might do, because they had Hannah Blundell and Jess Carter as the two fullbacks, resting Jon Anderson and keeping Neve Charles on the bench to come on later in the game. I think this is a hard one to call. You'd assume one of Blundell or Carter are going to come in to start. Blundell played full 90 minutes. Jess Carter came off after 60. You could use that to say, she was resting Carter for a bit to then start her against Wolfsburg. But I think of the two, she wasn't bad, but she looked probably the weaker of the two defensively. So then you think, was Blundell getting the full 90 minutes to get her match fitness back up? Because they've both come back from, injuries. Neither of them have played too much this season. Personally, I think I would go for Blundell as the more natural defender. Carter's someone who plays in midfield as well, whereas Blundell is just that fullback. But whoever does play is going to be in for a rough afternoon.
Yep, absolutely. It's going to be a tough game, even with Chelsea's preferred defence. And it was a tough game for Man City, or not Barcelona, Man City definitely. They were facing a Barcelona side who, as we mentioned last week, scored 99 goals between them in terms of attacking options. And as we saw, there were going to be 3 more goals added to that.
Yeah, and it really should have been more. Ellie Roebuck was outstanding. Probably the best game I've seen her have. And reminder of how young she is, I don't think we can say that Man City are still in the game, but the fact that they are only 3 goals down is all down to her. She made a number of brilliant saves, and it was like, sometimes you might put it, like with Wolfsburg against Chelsea, we can put it down to more to bad finishing, but this was, this is her showing, it was Roebuck showing just why she is Man City's number one and England's number one.
Yep, absolutely. And just take a look at the goals that Barcelona scored, because it were 3 really sort of perfected goals in terms of the tactical setup. So we got that first one by Shoala in the 35th minute. And then they were so smart in their play and the way they were intricate in their passing that Man City gave away a penalty in the 53rd.
Yeah, the penalty was really a bad moment for... It was Demi Stokes just had come on at half-time because Esme Morgan couldn't handle with Carolina Graham-Hansen. And, you know, just seconds before she conceded the penalty, Stokes did well to stop Barcelona from scoring. And then it's just something we see sometimes. It's just a needless, wouldn't call it a kick-out, but a leg to try and, you know, make a tackle. And, you know, at that point, Man City were still in the game. And it just allowed Barcelona to further cement their control.
Yep, and it's such a, you know, it's such a big mountain to overcome. I guess those two goals were pretty much a bit of a sucker punch, but then going from there and then sort of keeping things strong for a good half an hour and then conceding again in the 86th minute by Jenny Hermoso, that's just too much, surely.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it didn't help that they missed the penalty of their own at 2-0, pretty much, you know, moments after Barcelona had scored their penalty, that was their chance. You know, we saw it again in the Wolfsburg game. the goal that they scored to give them, you know, hope. If, and I think I love the way Chloe Kelly takes penalties, but I think this was, you know, it's a good save, but it's too central, and it's all about taking those chances, which is what Barcelona did right at the end. I think this just shows, we've spoken a bit about the work that Taylor's done, but it shows how far Man City, at least, are off the best in Europe, and Barcelona are one of, if not the best team in Europe right now.
Yep, definitely right up there, especially in terms of that blistering attack. But as you mentioned, the best in Europe, it's not just Barcelona. There's also the likes of PSG and Lyon, and those are the two teams that faced each other in the third of the semi-finals. And as we said last week, it was going to be a really tough game, and it absolutely was. There's only one goal in it, and that came in the 86th minute from Wendy Renard.
Yeah, it's like you said just then, like we said last week, PSG vs Lyon is... You know, they're not goal fests, but they are really good games. And unfortunately for PSG in cup competitions, it is always Lyon who seemed to get the wins. And it was, you know, a Renard penalty. It was that, again, that momentary lapse from PSG's defence that have put Lyon in pole position, especially with the away goal. And it means that PSG now have to open up themselves a bit more. And... You know, they do have the players to do it, to cause problems. But I don't know, I can't see past Lyon from using their big game experience.
Yep, and we saw already that PSG were definitely struggling with Lyon's flank play. And Cascarino, she was causing quite a lot of damage going down the PSG left. And their midfield was definitely doubling up to keep her at bay. And I wonder how you can keep that up for 90 minutes if you also then need to go and score. So you can bet that there's going to be a lot of goals in it for Lyon.
Yeah, it's the problem with these close ties between the two big teams, because PSG will look at their squad and, you know, look at how they're doing in the league and how they've fared in the league against Lyon and believe that they can beat Lyon. But that will also just play into Lyon's hands, like you said, because Lyon, they know they've got the, you know, the defensive quality to hot keep PSG at bay, but then they've got the attacking quality as well to then hurt PSG. And again, I think this might be close, but I do see Lyon winning the second leg as well, making the most of the openness that I think PSG will have.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, it's a very finely poised tie. But between PSG, Lyon, Barcelona, Man City and Chelsea and Wolfsburg, we've got a lot of great attacking football on show. And I think those games are going to be live on BT Sport, as they have been. The first legs have been. I'm not exactly sure what that means on American, so if there are any American listeners watching. But those games will be live for anyone tuning in. And I think we've wrapped up everything this week. Harry, do you have anything more you'd like to add?
No, I think just a quick... Well, I say no and I go on to speak. In the final game, Rosengard, Bayern Munich. No surprises there. You expect Bayern Munich to have another easy game. So, you know, no disrespect to Rosengard. They're in, you know, Bayern Munich are in the semi-finals. It's just now about who joins them from the other big teams.
I can't believe I've absolutely forgotten that. I completely ruled it out. Didn't exist to me. Didn't put it down on the brief.
Well, there wasn't much to say. It was just what we all expected, you know.
That's probably why.
They had the lead early on and, you know, ties done and dusted as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Bayern Munich are a very strong team, and I guess we already know that the winner of the Chelsea-Wolfsburg game is going to face either Rosengarten or Bayern Munich. As you said, it looks like Bayern Munich. So that's going to be a very strong game to see, because Chelsea and Bayern Munich, those are two teams with very strong midfield. And, you know, Lupoz could be facing her former team.
Yep, it's going to be good. It's going to semi-finals no matter what happens.
Absolutely. And I guess that's all we have time for this week. Thank you once again for listening and hearing us. You know, it's been a very action-packed week, and it will be another action-packed week. Make sure you keep in tune with all the Champions League action, and we'll be there to review it next week, same time.